And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
How can you say in Spanish, go fuck yourself?
Que te den por el culo.
Nice. I'm going to use that in the show. That's how we're going to start. We're going to start off the show telling everybody to go fuck themselves in Spanish. Because we don't do any better than that, really. That's about as classy as we get. What's up, everyone? This is Joe. Fun little unique episode we have today. You're going to hear me do one-on-one interviews with three wonderful folk from the game industry. I will be talking with Stuart Westfall from Draw Stickman Epic. I will be talking with Eduardo Jimenez from Super Toy Cars and Mr. David, I hope I don't butcher this, Amador, from my personal favorite of the group, Quest of Dungeons. You'll hear me make a few mentions to talking about things later on the show, which isn't going to happen. This was originally planned to splice into the other episode, but it just kind of built until it was a little too much. So this is its own thing, its own fun little thing. And don't forget, if you want to win codes for any of these games here, all you got to do is send us an email, thesmlpodcast@gmail.com, and you could win free shit because SML loves you, except we don't because we hate you, but we'll still give you free shit. Anyway, quick little musical interlude here, and then we will kick things off with the first interview and just ride it out from there. So fart. What's up, everyone? This is Joe, SML Podcast. A little different episode for right now. It's just me. Chris and Pappy will be joining in the show later on, a.k.a. later in the week when we record the rest of this. But for now, I am doing a one-on-one interview with a special game developer calling all the way from Spain. Would you like to introduce yourself and say hi to everyone?
Hello. My name is Eduardo Jimenez, and I am the founder and, I guess, the CEO of Eclipse Games. And, well, we have recently released Super Toy Cars on the Xbox One store, and previous to that we released Super Toy Cars on the Wii U, PC, and Steam, and Tachyon Project on Xbox One, too, in case you're interested.
I love Tachyon Project, personally. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So before we get too into things, I have an email from a friend, and it seems like the perfect question to start off the interview. He says, I have never heard of Super Toy Cars. Sell the game to me in one sentence, not a run-on sentence with lots of semicolons and commas either, like a normal sentence, and go.
Okay, so do you want to, you know, remember the times where you were playing like a kid with your toy cars in the house? Well, imagine you can do that now, but on your TV, and you know they actually run. That's what Toy Cars is. Super Toy Cars is all about trying to get that feeling of building your own tracks on your house onto a video game. Does it sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds like a great description and seems to pretty much match what I played, which I've had a lot of fun with the game, and I thank you for the review codes. I have poured way too much time in the game considering that Mad Max and Metal Gear are out, and I should really be playing those, but there's just been so many good indie games coming out that I can't tear myself away from, Super Toy Cars being one of those.
Thank you.
He has a second question. Also, what did you have for breakfast today?
Well, a bit of fruit. Orange juice, fruit, and I think a couple of cookies.
What kind of cookies?
I think I'm not sure what's the name in English. I think they're like butter cookies, not like the proper American cookies with, you know, with chocolate chunks or whatever. No, smaller ones. I usually have a healthy breakfast, so I can be not so healthy the rest of the day, I guess.
I am nothing but garbage kid cereals over here. Frosted Flakes, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I'm not sure what all they have over there, but if it's sugary and designed for 8-year-olds, I'll eat it. So how did you get into game development?
Well, I always wanted to develop games since I started playing in the arcades. So, well, I guess I should start by saying that I am a bit... Well, I'm old, relatively old. I'm 34 years old.
That's not old. I'm 33.
34?
Wait, am I 34? No, I am 34. Oh, my God, I forget.
Yeah. well, you know, then I guess that, well, there's lots of people that maybe not even know what an arcade is. I mean, if you are 18, maybe...
Yeah, it's sad that arcades have pretty much disappeared in recent years.
Yeah. So, but I remember when I was a kid, when I was 8 or 9, I went to the arcades and my dad gave me like, well, equivalent to 4 quarters, and I could have 4 games on an arcade, and I loved it. I mean, it was they were stupid games. I remember one of them. It was called Ninja Dragon. Well, I mean, it was the end of the 80s and early 90s, and you know, Ninja Dragon sounded really cool at the time.
Yeah,
I guess now it doesn't.
Oh, I've had my early days of playing Rampage and Gauntlet in arcades back when games in arcades only cost 1 quarter instead of like $1 to play.
Yeah, I mean, well, they cost $1 now. Well, I guess it's nothing because there are no arcades. But
if you can find arcade games nowadays, like we have a restaurant chain in America called Dave and Buster's, which is like a restaurant with an arcade. It's like an arcade for grown-ups, pretty much. And they have arcade games of like Flappy Bird and crap like that, and they charge like $1 to play it one time.
$1? That's amazing.
Yeah, it is absolutely stupid, and people pay it because they get drunk at Dave and Buster's, play a bunch of stupid games, win some tickets, and get some candy or something. I don't know what they do. I'd rather play at home on my Xbox instead of going to a grown-up arcade and watching drunk people waste money on Flappy Bird.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, anyway, I remember when that time when I was really a kid and I wanted to, you know, I've always wanted to understand how things work. And I remember playing those games, like, you know, there was just a guy that just punched and kicked ninjas that came right and left, and it was pretty much all you could do, like move around, jump, and kick ninjas in their arse. But it was so cool at the time, and you could, you know, it was like great, and you felt like you could control a ninja, or he wasn't exactly a ninja. I don't know exactly what the hell it was, but you control a character, and it was like so cool. And I just wanted to be able to do that. And when I was 11, my dad bought a computer for home, and very quickly after that, I learned to program in BASIC, and I started doing my own little games and, you know, stuff like that, like the typical something like the Bang Pong or Arkanoid, yeah, something like Arkanoid, things like that. I was able to program those things, and you know, I like it a lot. Then I grew up. I continued doing stuff on my own in my spare time, and then I went and studied computer science and managed to get a job in the industry. Spent 7 years working for other people, and then I worked first at Pirate Studios in Madrid. Then I moved to England, to the UK, to Brighton, and worked for BlackRock Studios. Then BlackRock closed, and I decided to go indie. And I've been trying to mix, to manage to mix indie work and freelance work ever since. So I've still done work for hire, but mostly as a freelance. And I've tried to ramp up my indie game as much as I could. And now I'm almost 100% committed to it.
Nice.
Maybe.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what games did you work on with BlackRock?
I worked in Pure and Split Second.
I absolutely love both of those games.
I'm particularly proud of both of them, and even more, because I don't know, somehow during development it was such a nice game to work for. I mean, at least when I got there, I only worked in Pure the last 9 to 12 months. I don't remember. It was nice. I don't know. The team, there was this ambient during development that was really nice, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I think we did a good job with it. And with Split Second, I am proud of the game that got there, but the development wasn't so smooth. But anyway, it was the game that ended up, I mean, that got out of it. I think it was a really good game, but it just didn't meet the expectations. And yeah.
I remember Split Second coming out. It was basically that and Blur from Activision came out basically a week apart in America. And yep. I think that's a huge problem of why neither of the games sold that well, because they pretty much cannibalized each other, which is a shame. Because both games are amazing.
I agree. I mean, that was part of the problem, and the other part was that we came out the same week that Red Dead Redemption came out.
Yeah,
so
that doesn't help either.
Yeah, when a game that sells 7 or 10 or 12 million copies releases the same day as you do, that's gonna eclipse you, like it or not. Even if it's not the same genre, even if you know people. People normally has only X money every month to spend on games. Usually, I mean, $60 a month is probably more than most people have. Sorry, and you know, releasing the same day as Red Dead Redemption doesn't help.
Yeah.
And yeah. But anyway, I mean, it wasn't. To be fair, it wasn't something that most of us predicted or could do something about. The game was delayed a couple of times, and eventually we had a date, and you know, and then we realized that it was the same day as the other game, but it was too late to change it, I guess.
Well, no matter what, that has always been one of my favorite 360 titles, especially when it comes to racing. Nothing in my eyes can beat the feeling of coming around a turn, seeing a jet crash landing, and then driving through the friggin' jet.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Just the disaster set pieces in that game blew my mind on the 360, and I wish someone would make a spiritual successor, or Disney would wisen up and bring back the franchise so we could see that kind of destruction on current gen consoles.
It could be great, couldn't it? I mean looking back at what we did with the 360 and you know and the PS3, it's amazing that you managed to get all the many, you know, those graphics, like those many particles, those many, I mean, those set pieces. And you know, that's because there was a very talented team behind that. I mean, there were lots of really good professionals that did a great job with it. And I guess that it shows. It's just a pity that it wasn't good enough, or it wasn't appropriate, or whatever. I don't know. It's a pity that it didn't go on, because I was really happy working at BlackRock, to be honest.
Yeah, I miss BlackRock Studios. That was a great studio. Not enough developers out there now can focus on racing games. Like, the Bizarre is gone, BlackRock's gone. It seems like Turn 10 is all that's left, doing the Forza games, and them and Playground Games doing the Horizon series.
Yep. Yeah, I guess so. And I guess there's the teams doing the Need for Speed games. And in PS4 there will be the Gran Turismo. and Mario Kart, and I don't think there's any other major franchises, racing franchises left.
I think the one racing franchise that absolutely needs a comeback is Burnout, but EA is too busy trying to make Need for Speed still massively popular year after year, when all they need to do is put out Burnout Paradise 2 and the world would be happy.
I completely agree with you. I love Burnout Paradise. It's one of my main inspirations for Super Toy Cars, and I really love the game. It's a pity that we are not going. I mean, we're not seeing, or is there, I don't think that we're going to be seeing Burnout Paradise 2 anytime soon. I certainly would love to.
Have you played Forza Horizon 2 at all?
I haven't played it yet. I'm planning on getting it probably this Christmas or something like that. I'm not sure when, but I will get it and play it.
I think Forza Horizon 2 is the closest we'll ever get to having a Burnout Paradise 2.
But Burnout Paradise was so... I haven't played Forza Horizon 2, but I don't think it's going to be that dramatic or drastic. The boost, the crashes, that sort of things. I don't think you can do them with licensed cars, can you?
No, you can't have the crazy crash physics, but instead of having set roads that you can drive on, in Horizon 2, there are vast countrysides that you can just blaze through. It is as close to a pure open world racer that I've seen, and the handling is perfect. The driving physics are perfect. There's an obscene number of races and events in the game. I've beaten the main quote unquote campaign twice over, and it still says that I'm 30% through all the races in the game.
Wow. Yeah. that sounds good.
It is crazy. I am still spending time on it a full year after it came out, and I'm just counting down hours until Forza 6, but I'll still find myself going back to Horizon and just driving around, getting in some races. It is fantastic, and if you haven't tried it yet, I highly urge you to give it a go.
Definitely, I have to do that. Yeah, you have sold it very well to me.
it's easily my favorite racer of all time, and given how much I loved Burnout Paradise, it's saying a lot. It doesn't have the crazy crash physics, but it's still a blast.
Cool. No, definitely. I'll definitely check it out. I like racing games. That's one of my favorite gaming genres. And I believe that as of lately, that's a genre that's getting less and less AAA releases. And that's a bit of a pity. What you say, the world will be happier with Burnout Paradise 2 and maybe Split Second 2 or a Blur 2 or something like that.
I wish we would see a Split Second 2 and a Blur 2. I'm not a big fan of the crew. I didn't really enjoy that. I thought the car handling physics were atrocious. I could not get into Drive Club. It's just all flash, no substance. Need for Speed kind of wore out its welcome with me because they won't let Criterion just do a fucking Burnout game again. And for me, it's just yearly releases of Forza keep me going in the racing genre. And then the indie titles like Beach Buggy Racing or Riptide GP, and then Super Toy Cars, which is easily the most fun I've had with a kart racing style genre game since Mario Kart on the Wii U. It felt really good. There's some graphical glitches in the game, but overall, I've had an absolute blast with Super Toy Cars.
Thank you very much.
Although I must say, I addressed this on the podcast last week when I was describing the AI, because this might be my only major issue with the game. In the later stages, the only words I could properly use to describe the AI in later stages in Super Toy Cars is they are fucking assholes. they are brutal in those later circuits.
I'm not sure. Is that a bad thing or a good one?
It's kind of both. It's it makes you work for your wins, but sometimes they just will not let you win. Like, you could be in first place, someone will hit you with a bowling ball or a rocket or something, knock you to the side, and then a pack of four of them drive by with at least two of them sideswiping you, knocking you further off. Some more will come by and hit you from behind to send you spinning. They are just relentless in that game.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I gotta say that I was the main guy behind the AI both in Pure and Split Second.
At least that would make sense, because in Split Second they could be pretty big dicks too.
And I don't know. I mean, the thing is, we developed there a system to change the AI and make it harder as you progress if you're good at the game. And if you're not, I mean, if you're struggling, the AI will try to be less punishing with you.
That would make sense.
So if you're good, the problem with that is that the system that we developed, there's a point where you've mastered it, and then it means that it's always running at the hardest possible. And that can be annoying, because they make very few mistakes, particularly when they are not packed. And if they got you with a missile or with a ball or something, then they're gonna pass you all in a pack. So yeah, it gets to be a bit annoying. But I don't know. I mean, I think that people that get the game to be that good usually is because like you are used to racing games.
Yeah.
So besides the problem, what you said, how unfair it is to be hit by a missile when you're in your last lap and then four of them passing you by. If you make a mistake, it's you're punished severely.
Yeah, I will say it's not like Mario Kart levels bad, where you could go in first place and then get hit with a blue shell, a red shell, another red shell, somebody bullet bills right by you, and then you get hit by a guy with a star, you get knocked off the ledge, and then someone else hits you and you're in eighth place. And it's not like rubber banding AI. The closest thing I could say is it's the closest I have ever felt like I was playing with online people in an offline game. Because people online, they're assholes. I think the world knows that if you play a video game online, there's a 90% chance that deep down you're an asshole. And that's what it feels like. Like, I'm playing against a bunch of people in a clan who just group up and take out everyone. It feels very human when I'm racing against them in later difficulties.
I guess that's a compliment for me.
So job well done with the AI. But they're still assholes.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And in their behalf, too. I guess they like being an asshole. Well, several of them.
So what kind of influences did you bring from Pure and Split Second into Super Toy Cars?
So I guess to explain the influences, I'll explain where I'm coming from with Super Toy Cars. So Super Toy Cars is kind of like the continuation of the second version of a very small game I did for XB Live Indie Games like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I don't know, long time ago. It was just top-down, and it was just an experiment that started me doing just a simple experiment to learn the car physics, and ended up with a full-fledged game. Well, full-fledged Xbox Live Indie Game standards, okay?
I'll have to check that out, because I haven't really dabbled in the indie game section on the 360, but I might have to track that one down and check it out.
Yeah, it's called Toy Cars. I think it's $1 now. So, I mean, anyway, that game wasn't that good, but I just I thought we could do better, and I thought that we could have a game that was that game is only racing and is on tape. I mean, it's again on tabletop surfaces. But it's not, I mean, I did the graphics, so they're not that good. yeah, I'm not cool. They're not an artist. Anyway, I wanted to do a second one, I wanted to make things better in almost every sense. So I got in touch with a friend of mine who is an artist and, you know, wanted to leave Ubisoft. He was working at Ubisoft Barcelona. He was a bit annoyed with things and yes, left. And, you know, we got together and started working on that. He did a great job with the graphics, sort of, particularly initially, because we were talking about 2012, 2013. And so he was doing a great job. So we decided to move the camera behind the car. And then I said, okay, this looks good. How about we try to make the handling model more, bit more deep, I think, and try to have different kind of cars and you know, have different like, you know, like more drifty cars, kind of like in Blur or Burnout Paradise, and have more stable and you know, heavy cars, and try to, you know, work with that. And then so yeah, things went better and growing a lot, and so we took a lot of influences from those two games that I told you, but also from Split Second and Pure. We reused a lot of the AI concepts that I have developed there. I mean, they're actually it's not like I took any code from them or anything. I published a couple of articles about it in papers and Kamasutra, and we got the concept of the AI. We got some of the ideas, like you know, the I mean, it's a very, very small scale, but this in Super Toy Cars, you have like trucks that drop Lego pieces and candy dispensers and stuff like that. They are like a bit like in Split Second, those I don't remember how it was called, like these moves that drop you a bomb on the track and things like that.
Yeah.
So we tried to get a little bit of that because I thought that was a really cool idea and that we could use it. And also, well, the AI and all the well, I don't know, I learned a lot while working at BlackRock, so I bet there's lots and lots of things that I got from there. I guess that I have internalized them so much that I cannot see them as clearly as I see when I was just, I mean, I obviously played the hell out of Split Second.
Yeah.
And that means that I'm not going back to playing it again now, because, you know, imagine I was developing AI, so that means I had to race a lot against AI. I finished the game during development probably 8 to 10 times from start to finish. So, you know, once it released, I really wasn't in the mood of playing it yet again. And I still see it, and I think it's fun, but I'm not in the mood of playing it again still. So I go and play other games that I thought that were really good and they're similar and references, and I try to get influenced from those while I keep many of the lessons that I learned during Split Second and Pure probably in my head. I just cannot remember them.
That kind of leads into a question that my co-host Pappy would normally ask right now. His favorite question to ask developers is, what games would you play during development, kind of just to relax from what you were doing? Last week we had Eddie Lee from one of the developers behind Nova 111, and he surprised us by saying that he would relax with Dark Souls 2, which kind of like, how do you relax to that? But that's an interesting answer, and I'm curious to know what kind of games would you play during development to just kind of take a break from what you're creating and play something else?
I usually play League of Legends. I usually play once a day, maybe twice. Usually after lunch, I just have a game of League of Legends, and it's not particularly relaxing, but actually usually it's not relaxing at all, but it's really, it's a good break. It's definitely a break from what you do. Yeah. And as of lately, I recently finished Lords of the Fallen, which is probably the easy version of Dark Souls.
Yeah, that's the one from Square Enix, isn't it?
Square Enix, I'm not sure.
Bandai? I'm not sure. I think it depends on the region where you are, who it was published by. But I think I have that. Yeah, I do have that one. I have the collector edition with the giant bust statue because I have to own that crap. But yeah, I got a very Dark Souls vibe from that, which is funny that last week we had someone play Dark Souls and this week we have someone playing Dark Souls Lite, basically.
By the way, you're right. This is Square Enix, the publisher. But yeah, I finished it recently, and nowadays I'm playing Motorstorm because I'm trying to do some research on racing games because I want to go back to doing racing games again at some point in the not so distant future.
Are you making the spiritual successor to Split Second for the Xbox One?
No, definitely not. A Split Second, it's a very complex game to replicate.
You could call it Half Minute.
Sorry?
You could call it Half Minute. And it's the spiritual successor.
Well, like the 60 Seconds film. Never... But anyway, no, it's a Split Second is a really big game. It requires a lot of people, and when you're an indie game, you gotta know your strengths and your weaknesses. You gotta be really aware of your weaknesses, particularly. I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make. I mean, you cannot, if you try to do a MOBA and you're an indie game made of five people, you're gonna fail. I mean, really. If DC couldn't make a successful MOBA with the DC franchise and lots of money, you're not going to do it. I mean, maybe someone will prove me wrong, but I bet there's hundreds of examples that will prove me right.
Yeah, you need to have a team of the proper size to make a game of the proper scale.
That's right. And so if you're three people, like it's our case, you try to do a game like Split Second, you're gonna fail miserably. and
true.
That's not something I want to do. I mean, I'm not even particularly. I think there's lots of things that we could and should have done better with Super Toy Cars, and there's even things that I think that should be there and are not there because we're not a big enough team. Like online multiplayer, lots of reviews have picked up on that, and you're right. I mean, it's a racing game, and how the hell do you release a racing game on a very online-centric console without online multiplayer?
I was going to ask that. Someone was saying that the PC version has online multiplayer.
It does, sort of. I mean, it's buggy. Okay, buggy. It's not particularly stable. But it works, or it used to, because since I moved to Unity 5, things just started to break, and I'm not sure if it's really working any longer. But the problem is, developing for the PC, particularly online, is so much easier. Imagine, first of all, you don't have to comply with TCRs. TCRs are like technical certificate requirements. So you don't have to. Microsoft will check certain things before you can publish for their console, and there's a lot of things related to online that they will check if you have online multiplayer. If you don't have it, the release process usually goes a lot smoother because those things are not going to be checked, and you're not going to fail with them. Secondly, developing for a console has considerably longer turnaround time. So when you build for a console, it usually takes longer than building for PC. Let's say building Super Toy Cars takes around 3 to 5 minutes for the console. It takes 1 to 2 minutes for the PC. And you have to deploy it to two different consoles. And then do an online game and so on. If you do it on PC, in our case, we don't even have to build it. You just get the same code in two machines and run it in the editor in both of them, and you can play it. So testing a feature on PC takes roughly a minute. Testing a feature on on Xbox One may take roughly 10 minutes. So, you know, I mean, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes and you're going to introduce a lot of bugs that you need to debug and you know, and make right. So the process of developing the online game for PC wasn't particularly easy, at least not for me. I'm not an experienced online programmer. So if you add to that the fact that you have to do it on a console, and if it took me roughly 3 weeks to do it for PC, it may take a couple of months to do it on the Xbox One. And it may delay our release date by another 2 months because of the bugs.
Yeah, so basically it's a feature that's not really worth the time and effort for something that could still end up being fairly buggy, I guess.
And also, I mean, I know that some people will miss it a lot. And, I mean, this is hard to say, but it may not be worth the effort for the money that it gives you, okay? So
yeah.
It's, I know it may sound like too businesslike and stuff like that, but I also have a family to support, and I do need my investments to be at least somehow profitable. So if I'm gonna spend, I mean, if I'm gonna add a couple of features that took me a couple of days or 5 days or a week, you know, or a couple of weeks, then I may consider it, even if they're not gonna increase the sales, because I really care for the products that I make. I really care for the games that I'm working on. And you know, I'll definitely do it. And if I see bugs, I'll try to fix them, even if they're not gonna give me any more sales.
Yeah.
But then spending 2 to 4 months on a feature that may not be that great and may end up not being used that much, because you know, I'm not gonna sell millions of copies. This is not Burnout. This is not Forza. It's gonna sell in the thousands. Then there's not gonna be that many people to play online. So unless you're gonna play with friends, you're not gonna be playing online that much. So you know, it's hard to sell. Let's say internally, it's hard to say okay, let's do this because it's gonna be. Why? It's not going to be worth it, most likely.
I think a lot of this comes down to reviewers need to get their expectations checked. Like, if this was a $20 game, I can expect people would be like, why the hell isn't there online? But it's a $10 game, which isn't that much nowadays. Like, this isn't the early days of Xbox Live where you'd pay $4 for a game. It's only a $10 game, and it's on sale. I personally didn't expect online from the beginning. Like, if it was there, that'd be a cool little bonus, but it's just with how many games have come out on current consoles nowadays, that like Beach Buggy Racing is another example, or Riptide GP, as I mentioned before, where they can have like 6 players local, but there's no online. I can't really fault them for that. It's like you said, it's not like this is going to be Forza and sell 5 million copies. Even if there was online, it might not be heavily populated. So I think it's better to focus on a solid offline experience with couch co-op than have a half-assed online, which reviewers will just ding you for anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that's actually what you just described is my opinion, but then I may be wrong or not. I'm not sure. I mean, it's kind of weird because we have like, I haven't checked before, but we have like 3.5 stars out of 5 in the user reviews on Xbox One, but we have very low scores on Metacritic reviews, and that kind of surprises me. And on the other hand, with Tachyon Project, we have, I think, 3 stars and on user reviews on Xbox One, but we have 7.5 Metacritic score now. So I don't really understand. We're going to have, like, I would be happy if our Xbox One version of Super Toy Cars reaches 50% on Metacritic, but then users seems to be saying it's okay, it's a 7. And on the other hand, with Tachyon Project, the press liked it a lot, but users didn't like it that much. So I'm not sure if, I mean, I'm not sure what to think now. So yeah, it's great to hear that someone that played it didn't expect the online experience from the start. And
it's just you have to keep your expectations in check with games nowadays, and too many people expect too much from games. Like, someone could release an absolutely perfect game, the best visuals possible, the best music possible, a flawless online experience, and somebody will find something to bitch about. It's just today's society. Everybody bitches about everything. You just can't help it. If you do something right, people are still going to bitch about it. If you do something wrong, they're still going to bitch about it. It's like I said, I guess, earlier, gamers are assholes. We are all assholes.
I guess so. I guess that what you say about today's society, I guess it's not like it's not today's society. I think that we used to do that, but we went to the pub, got drunk, and then bitched about things. Nowadays, you just bitch about things online.
Yeah.
And so, and you don't even have to go down to the pub to start ranting about things and people. And
I mean, even amazing games. Like, you could go to Grand Theft Auto 5, their Metacritic page, and look at user reviews, and there's going to be dickheads out there giving it a zero, calling it the worst game ever, probably because you can't murder children or something stupid. There's just... There's asshole. They're, gamers are assholes. That's all you could say. Gamers are assholes. I'm an asshole. Yeah. So.
Yeah, we gamers are assholes.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about Super Toy Cars is the soundtrack in the game. I know the band name pops up at the splash screen at the beginning, and I always forget to look at it. What is the band that has done the soundtrack for the game?
The band is called the Spinwires. They are a Buffalo-based band, I think. Tyson Prince is the lead singer, the guy I mostly talk to, and they are really nice guys. I mean, I love the music. I must confess, I really like the kind of music, like the kind of punk rock, whatever is it called in general. But I love it. I mean, you know, it's the kind of music that you find in an American Pie film or something like that. I, by the way, love American Pie films. They're great. I laugh my ass off with those. And these guys, I'm really, they're really good. I love the music. I love their the music, and I'm really grateful I managed to work with them. And if you don't mind, I can tell you a little bit about the story of how we came up to work together.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how did you guys get in touch and make this game happen?
So Tyson kind of contacted me offering so we could use their instrumental versions for free in our games. And I just went and checked the music, and it was like, wow, that's great. Those are really professional sounding songs, and they sound great. So I went back to him and say, you know what? I mean, we love them. We really would love to use that music, and I think it fit perfectly the game that we're doing. And we love to do it. But I hate to work with people and just for free. I mean, I don't believe in having people that works for free. So I offered them a small percentage of the benefits of the game, and they offered us to use some vocal songs. And we picked up a couple of them, and then when we were about to release on Xbox One, I told them, "Hey, we're gonna release the game on Xbox One, but you know, people in the last version they complain a bit about the soundtrack being a bit short. There was only 6 songs last time, so how about we add a couple more if you have some spare to use?" And they just gave me 3 more. We added 2 instrumental and 1 vocal. And you know, it was great. They're really, really nice guys. It's great. Their videos are great. They're really fun guys, and it's really nice working with them. And I love the music. So yeah, I'd recommend anyone to check out their album. I think the album is called the Spinwires 2. I think they got the songs in iTunes. and probably somewhere else. If you Google the spin wires, I don't know if I said it correctly, but DHESPINWIRRES.
Yeah, the spin wire sounds right.
Yeah, and check it out, Google it, and check their music. I think you won't regret it.
I'll toss a link in the comments, in the description for the episode, so people could track it down a bit easier. I really love the soundtrack. Even with 9 songs, I felt it could have used a few more, because you would hear the same ones a lot, given how many different races there are in the game. But I loved listening to the soundtrack. I still have some of the songs stuck in my head where I'll just be playing a game or something, and then I'll just say, "In a slam band." Just it's good stuff. I'm gonna have to track it down and check it out. My only wish that you could have done with the soundtrack is in the same race after a song ends to go to something different instead of starting that same song over. But I'm not sure if that was a technical limitation or I don't know.
Well, that was I guess I was a bit lazy. Or usually, you know, races usually last 2 to 3 minutes, and doing that required me to add more code, and more code means more bugs. And I decided, okay, and 90% of the time you're not gonna even finish the song you're listening to, so I wouldn't do it.
I can understand. There's not many times that it's happened, but. Yeah,
I mean,
great
most
soundtrack.
Songs are like 2.5 minutes, and I mean, there are races that can last up to 3 minutes, particularly with the slowest cars. But whenever you get to the fastest cars, you're never gonna listen to the song start again, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that could wrap it up for us. It's been longer than I expected, which is always good. I feel bad that the rest of the guys couldn't be here for this, but tough shit for them. I guess we will take a quick break. I'll play a song in between. We'll be back with the rest of the guys in a little bit. Is there anything else you'd like to say to all of our listeners who are listening to you talk right now?
No, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me around, and it's been good fun. It's been nice talking to you, and I'm sorry about the not being able to match everyone's schedule, but you know, we have a 6-hour difference with you, and I guess it'll be 9-hour difference with other guys, and it wasn't particularly easy to fit everyone's schedules.
Fuck them. They missed out. But yeah, thanks again for joining us. We are giving out codes for the game. We got 2 codes to give away. We'll talk about that later in the show. And yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you very much. Been great talking to you too.
All right, and we'll be right back. So don't go anywhere unless you don't like our show. Hi, what's up, everyone? This is Joe, SML Podcast. We have another interview right now. Pappy and Chris still not here because they have day jobs and important things to take care of, whatever that means. Special interview once again. I would like to pass it off to our guest. If you'd like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do, and why we should care.
Yeah, awesome, Joe. My name is Stuart Westfall. I am the VP of Games and Interactive at HitSense. And we're a game developer and studio slash publisher slash we wear a lot of hats. And I'm here to talk about Draw Stickman Epic, which we are releasing on Xbox One on September 11th.
Which is quite possibly today, if you're listening to this the day it goes live. If you're listening on Bleeding Cool, it was a couple days ago, so get with the program. You say you wear a lot of hats. Does that include fedoras?
You know, I had a fedora that I wore when I started here, and the executives threw it out the window.
I would like to applaud those executives. Executives.
It was an old beat-up fedora that I had for years when I was on the road with this band that I was managing, and I guess they just really hated it.
What band?
I ran a three-piece, it was like a Crosby, Stills, Nash / Eagles group called the Barron River Trio.
Yeah. I feel bad that Chris isn't here because he's played in a number of bands, and I'm sure you and him could just hijack the show about band talk for a good hour and a half or so, as he is wont to do.
Yeah, it's too bad. It was definitely a good time.
All right, so Draw Stickman Epic. Let's make believe I don't know anything about this game, and I'm interested in it, but I'm not sure what it is. Sell it to me.
All right, Draw Stickman Epic is a game where you get to draw your own hero, and then you draw a friend for your hero who's lonely once this hero comes to life and starts jumping around the page. And then you draw your hero a friend, and then you name the friend, and then everyone's happy. And then this evil book with sharp teeth comes over and eats your friend in front of you. And you're mortified, and you realize that you have to jump into this book and go on this adventure to rescue your friend. And then on this adventure, you get these different magical pencils in which you can use to draw your way through several puzzles. So, for instance, you get fire pencil, and you try not to burn the bunnies, but you burn down trees, and any type of obstacles that are in your way. And then later on, you get a cloud pencil, in which you'll use to rain on things, to grow them, to fill up buckets, or if you draw a really dark cloud, it will become lightning bolts will come out of it, and you can use the lightning to set things on fire, to explode dynamite, to send electrical, down like a wire to set off different things. So it's just this fun adventure game in which you use your creativity. You can draw anything you want, literally anything you want, and just really
which, given the internet, we know what that means.
Yeah.
I know previously on our shows when talking with Mike Micah, who was the insane mind behind iDarb, he mentioned how long it took for a phallus to appear in his game. I will be the first to admit that was pretty much the first thing I did in Draw Stickman. Okay, the second one, it was my friend. I named him Dickie.
Aptly named.
Yes. Overall, it sounds a lot like it could get compared to games like Scribblenauts or Drawn to Life. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there are definitely similarities. This game has been out for a while. I really wanted to play with the Kinect, and this is why we have spent, the last year bringing the game to Xbox, and going through the whole developer program and working with, the great team at ID at Xbox. But, Draw Stickman Epic has picked up 5 Webby Awards over the last few years.
Wow.
And yeah, it originally started out as an experiment here at the company with drawstickman.com. And it took about a year to develop, and it went viral, and it just started picking up attention. And then we, after that, followed up with some new episodes, and then eventually brought Draw Stickman Epic to the market. And we were, at that point, we released that mobile first, and then started moving it over to different platforms. We created a Steam version, which the Xbox version is closer to the Steam version than it is to the mobile version. So it's a lot harder. The audience is different, you know, obviously on Xbox and on you know, PC than it is on mobile. But
plus, it has the name recognition. When I mentioned to my co-host Chris, who again unfortunately has real life obligations that he has to do, whatever that means, I said, hey, we might be able to get to talk to someone from Draw Stickman Epic. And he's like, wait, Draw Stickman? Like the web thing, Draw Stickman? I'm like, yeah. And he was so excited. He's like, you need to fire that up now so I can fuck around with it. And he was the smile on his face as he fired up that game and started to mess around with the Kinect was magical.
That's awesome.
He did a horrible job of making someone with the Kinect, but well, we laughed like crazy, that's for sure.
I'll tell you, the team kind of hates me here internally for bringing it to Xbox because they're much better artists than I am. and they're not used to drawing with their arm instead of their... and so when they're using the Kinect, they get really frustrated because their drawings don't look nearly as good as the ones they do for the game. but that's okay. And what's funny is I went to the PAX just recently up in Seattle, and Microsoft had us at this pre-PAX event. And so I got to showcase the game to press, and then they had a bunch of fans come in, and it was a really great experience. And people were just kept lining up, and just crowding around. And I remember one guy said, he's like, I can't draw very good. And he was a little stressed out about it. And I was like, well, just watch, you know, just give it a moment. And then after he saw the person redraw their stick man, he's like, oh, you don't have to draw good at all. I love it. And everybody was so supportive. And I think that's one of the neat things about this game is that not only can you draw whatever you want, you also don't have to have any drawing abilities.
As I am proof of. I legitimately tried giving the Kinect a shot, but I have fat, chubby fingers and hands. And when I use my meat paws to try making something, it doesn't detect when I let go. So it's just scribbles everywhere. Mm. So I just accepted that my bear claws are just too much, and I used the controller, and it was much easier for me, at least.
Oh man, well, sorry to hear that. I have to take a look at that.
Oh, it's fine.
We spent a lot of time on what was the best way to approach the Kinect. It was definitely a challenge. There's a lot of magic when you're drawing with it, but it is difficult sometimes to make it work just the way we wanted to. We went through a lot of iterations on it. And right now, you know, if you hold your right hand up in the shape of an L with your thumb and your pointy finger, that's supposed to just move the cursor. And then when you pinch, it's like you're holding a pencil. But sometimes when you're pinching, if you're having trouble with that, if you just make a fist and just draw with a fist, then that will help a lot. And then you just go back to that L shape to go back cursor. If you go back between those two, that should help you when you're doing your drawings. And then when you open your hand, that's when it comes to life.
I will definitely have to give that another try. But either way, I'm having a blast with it. And God knows that there's going to be people out there who are drawing like realistic portraits faces on these stick characters because they're just so good at drawing. It's like the people who on the Wii U, the Miiverse thing, where they'll just draw these intricately detailed portraits using their Wii U and a freaking stylus.
It's amazing. It's amazing what people will do when you give them. I really think there's a lot of creativity when you give people limits.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and that's where
it's amazing what people can do.
Yeah. Well, we did a product called the Hanks Rider with Tom Hanks. And while we were doing that, basically it's a typewriter simulator for iOS, for Apple, iPad and iPhone. And but while we were doing that, we started finding all kinds of crazy stuff that was going on with typewriters. And there was all these people that were doing art with them. And they would do these, this one person, just used, could make this in like elaborate portrait just with the typewriter. It's pretty crazy.
Wow. I'm incredibly curious to know, what did Tom Hanks have to do with the typing?
So Tom's a huge typewriter fan. He has this huge, huge collection. And when we talked to him about doing that, he, you know, it was really important that he, that our final product was something that people would really enjoy. And it wouldn't just be like, you know, like those lighter apps.
Yeah.
You know, those are cool, but it was just like, you don't, there's not much you can do with it. You have to be at a concert really to really use it. And even then it's like this short moment. But so we spent a lot of time together working on making it not gimmicky. And so the only way to do that was to focus on something that people would be able to use over and over again. And so what we ended up doing is making like a light word processor, something that you could take your notes on, something that you could send to people. Like if you wrote them a letter, it'd be, you know, it would have a, it'd have the font, you know, from a typewriter. But a lot of what makes the Hanks Rider fun is sounds, you know, so you get the kind of the look and the feel of a typewriter while you're using it.
Does he do any voice work for it?
So we talked about doing a couple different things, but right here there, in the app, there's not really any need for any voice work. So it's really just the sounds of the typewriters. But he did send his 6 typewriters from his personal collection.
Wow.
And we use those to kind of just kind of get feel and the vibe from the typewriters. And then we use the base models. You know, we model them in 3D and then we repurposed them, you know, new skins, we tweaked the cases, and we made these custom Hanks Rider typewriters for the app. But they're all based off of stuff from his personal collection.
That is pretty cool. Although I do think you missed a golden opportunity where instead of having a typewriter sound when you would hit a letter, it's just Tom Hanks saying the letter that you just hit.
I love it.
That'd be a great update. I'm just putting that out there.
Thanks.
Plus, he'd be more involved with it. You would just hear him yelling at you as you type something.
That's hilarious. I'm going to bring that up in the next meeting.
And that could be on the console version of the Hanks Rider. So, is Draw Stickman your first foray into console stuff?
Yeah, so this was really an opportunity for us to just get to know the Xbox team better, dip our toes in the Xbox waters, and really just prepare to see, you know, like, we were anxious to find out, we are anxious to find out how, you know, the Xbox market, what kind of interest we get there, because there's a lot of stuff that we could start bringing over to Xbox, both, you know, new titles, as well as some of our back catalog. So we're really excited. You know, it's kind of a new place for us. We've been working on this for about a year. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And it's always good to see new developers coming to console and hooking us console owners up with titles too, since not all of us are PC guys, but
yeah. Well, yeah. I've spent time, you know, both in, you know, I started on console growing up, you know, and I stayed that way for a long time. And then I also would, you know, was a PC gamer for a really long time. And then I didn't really even get into mobile gaming, until around when I started here at HitSense. So it's really fun to get back to console. We've been playing in the PC area just a little bit, you know, with a couple ports of our games, but this is really fun. I'm really excited to see how, you know, playing with the Kinect's so much fun, and I'm really anxious to see if people have as much fun as I was having with it. And it sounds like you were too, even though you're having some trouble with the stickman drawing.
I've been having a blast with the game itself. I'm one of those completionists, so like I see an area, I'm trying like crazy to get to there. The volcanic level, I just found that armor pencil as well as the little the Lad of Los, is it?
Lad of Loss.
Lad of Loss. Yeah, I just found that one earlier today while I was playing before we started this interview. And
that's
awesome. I did the penguin level as well. And of course, the first thing I did was chop down every tree I could. It's like you mentioned, not killing the bunnies in the first level. First thing I did, murder a bunny.
Yeah, I say not, you know, you know, in case I catch some heat on that. it's a lot of fun to just find your own fun in games. That's always been my favorite thing about games, is just looking for what can you do, and just spend all your time just going after every tree or whatever, like you said. That's great to hear that you did that. Have there been any spots where you've been stuck? Like, have you beat Zarp's Fortress yet?
No, I'm only about halfway through. I just started on the second page. I opened everything up. I've been spending too much time going back through levels looking for stuff. If I see an icon missing when I get back to the main menu or the main overworld, I need to go back in and figure out what I'm missing. And then that bonus stage, the, what is it, bunnies and buckets?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bonus stage, though.
Oh, one of the side stages, at least.
Yeah.
I'm having a brutal time with that stage. I'm just getting confused so quick, and I would die real quick, too. But I think now that I have the armor pencil, I might have a better shot.
The armor pencil makes a big difference. This version's so much harder than the mobile version. And buckets and bunnies, there's definitely a few spots where it's really hard to get through if you and that armor pencil helps a lot. I know there's a section right by where you have like a campfire going, and there's a bridge, and then there's a fire rock on the other side.
Oh, those friggin' fire rocks.
So have you figured out how to get those things to not blow fire on you?
I think I figured it out on the lava stage where you would just zap them with lightning and it stuns them.
Cool.
But I'm not sure if that's like a temporary stun or if it's a for good stun.
Yeah. It's definitely temporary.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just learning little bits as I keep going along, and I'm trying to play as much as I can, but this has been such a ridiculous week for games.
It is.
I mean, Mad Max and Metal Gear alone, and then I think there were like six different indie games that came out on the Xbox One this week.
Yeah.
And it's just been crazy, and it's a great time to just game because there's so much good stuff out right now.
You know, it really is. The ID at Xbox program is really awesome. I mean, they have a really awesome team, and when I was at PAX, I got to see several indie developers and talk with them for a little bit. And it's really exciting to see the community growing. And it's really cool to be able to be a part of that community. So it's a lot of fun.
And it's good for me because that means I get more games to buy and play.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Are you working with any other consoles to get this game out, or is it just Xbox for now?
It's just Xbox for now. There are some, you know, there's some talks going around.
I'd imagine this is perfect for the Wii U and 3DS.
Yeah, there's definitely been some interest in a few different platforms. But really, we wanted to, you know, first give Xbox One the first go and see how the community responds to it. And so far, the community, the support's been really great. Like I said, there was a little resistance internally because of the challenges that come with the Kinect and the quality of your drawings.
Yeah.
But really, in the end, it was, you know, we opted in for the magic of being able to draw with the Kinect over, you know, being, you know, Picasso or, you know, a really an amazing. and who knows, you know, maybe we'll discover someone like you said that happens to be the world's best arm drawer.
I will say it is awesome to see other developers still utilizing the Kinect. I'm a day one owner. I still firmly believe that if you want to get the most out of your Xbox One console, you need to have a Kinect. I mean, in my brain, telling my TV to turn on and watch ESPN is magic. That's the future to me. Like, that's the shit I've been dreaming about as a kid, and now it's reality. I can do this. I can tell my TV to mute, or I can tell a movie to pause, and I don't need to touch a controller. And
yeah.
If you don't have a Kinect, you miss out on that, and it's a shame.
It is pretty awesome. We joke a little bit about how it's always watching, and it knows everything that we're doing. and there's been a lot of times while we were developing, and we're just having a discussion, and it's sitting right there, and so if I say the word Xbox, it will start listening, you know? And I'm like, so one of us will have to, in mid-sentence, as we're discussing something important, we'll be like, stop listening. And you hear us getting like frustrated, like it's the annoying person in the room. And no, but it's really amazing. When there's a fun tool called NUI that comes with the developer kits, and it's really fun because it lets you see through the different sensors that it has set up. And it's really cool because it creates kind of it looks a little bit like Minority Report when he's watching like playback videos of his family, you know, where it's like kind of 3D, but if you spin to the side, it's like it's you see it kind of projecting in the air. And then so anyways, you can kind of do that with the Xbox controller. It's really cool.
That's pretty cool sounding.
Yeah.
I'd love to see more behind the scenes stuff with how the Kinect works. It's just, compared to the first Kinect, this thing is insane, and it just blows my mind sometimes.
It's really cool. It seems like there's a lot more that could be done with Kinect, and I'm excited to be able to bring, you know, Stickman Epic to the Xbox One so that we could kind of help push it along and encourage other people to think about the Kinect in different ways, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to see more people get back into Kinect development. I mean, you see a couple games come out here and there, but not all of them are that amazing.
Yeah.
But it's the little things. The little things help.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and, you know, it's nice, too, to be able to get into this. The Xbox marketplace is different, you know, than mobile. And it's nice to be able to do that because I'm hoping that, you know, parents will get this and play this with their kids. And what's neat about that is if you can get exposed to this stuff at an early age, you start thinking, you know, you think about life differently, you know, and you come up with your own ideas. And I'm excited to see, you know, what the new generations will bring after they play, you know, this game. And it's a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, we were saying, we talked about it a little bit last week after we had some time into it, and we were mentioning how good of a family game it just seems it would be. That's something that everybody could sit down and play together and just laugh like crazy.
Yeah, it really is. It's strange that with this game, we've seen a large spread in the demographics We've seen very young ages, all the way down to 4. And then we've seen, people, that don't normally play games, in the higher ages, 60s, 70s.
Old people.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I was skirting around that. But it's been really great. I mean, I played this. Draw Stigma and Epic came out several years ago, and my son, who is now 6, we were playing it when he was 4, and he could play most of it by himself when I wasn't, with him. But there were a lot of times where we'd do puzzles together, or he'd want me to just sit there and watch it, watch him draw stuff, and go. I had to help him with Zarp's Fortress. That one's a little bit hard for young kids. But this Xbox version's a lot tougher, so I'm imagining there's a lot more opportunities for, for parents to help their kids work through these.
And it helps parents be involved, which is another good thing.
Yeah.
Instead of mindlessly buying their 8-year-old Grand Theft Auto and then ignoring what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you got to be careful. Yeah, what you buy your kids.
Yeah,
but this is definitely a fun way. I personally did it with my son. I know, the CEO and the president here both played this game with their kids. It's a lot of fun.
So it's kid tested too. So you already know it's good.
It is kid tested.
Kid tested, mother approved. It's the kicks of video games.
Hey, we should bring you on as our marketing guy. Oh, wait, but you don't like to have a job, right?
I actually wish I could. I've been dealing with physical issues, back problems for, 5-6 years now that just keep me grounded and unavailable to really do anything. But I have gaming and podcasting to kill time, so that's always fun.
It's good that you have that. Back problems are not fun.
Not at all. They suck.
So what happened?
I was working at Walmart right away. I've led a great life. I was unloading the truck that came in the delivery. And as I was taking stuff off of the truck and putting it on the line to shove out to everyone else to sort into the proper departments, a big wall of merchandise just fell on me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I was out of work for, 13 days. I think it was 2 weeks before workers' comp would pay you for your time missed, and they rushed me back right before workers' comp would have to pay me, despite me saying I wasn't ready. And like 3 days afterwards, I threw my back out again, and I went on workers' comp, and I was out for probably 2 months that time. And again, I wasn't feeling right, but they brought me back to work. Instead of working in the back, they had me, they offered to make me a greeter, and I said I'd rather quit my goddamn job than be a people greeter at like 25 years old at Walmart.
Ouch.
Yeah, and they ended up putting me in electronics, so I got to sell games. That was always fun, at least.
Yeah.
I kind of know what I'm talking about with video games a little bit. It seemed to be fine until like a year or two later. I was working a different job and I left the house to go to work and I slipped on ice and fell. I actually knocked myself out. My wife ended up messaging me. She's like, "Work just called. Where are you?" And I'm like, "I've been laying in the parking lot for about 10 minutes now because I can't get up."
Oh, man.
And
that was at Walmart's parking lot?
No, this was actually at home.
Oh, man.
In our home parking lot while I was working for a different company called Redner's. And my life just like went to hell after that. I had the back issues. I was seeing doctors for that. And then I had gallbladder problems.
Jeez.
And yeah, I got rushed to the ER there. They scheduled surgery for me for like 2 months later. And I was told to stay off work until the surgery. I got the surgery done. And I was released the next day. That night, I was rushed back because when they took my gallbladder out, they nicked my liver. So bile was just pouring all over my intestines.
Wow.
So I had emergency surgery there. I ended up having, I think, three different surgeries for a gallbladder.
Man, you've had it rough.
Yeah, and since then, like, I tried returning to work, and it just wasn't happening. And I've been off since, and luckily, I have a loving wife who is a nurse who makes enough money to support us, my lazy ass, our five cats, because I'm a crazy cat lady as well, and my gaming habit. So,
man.
But well, hey, man, I'm podcasting, so that's fun. Yeah.
What did you say?
I said I'm podcasting, so that's fun.
Yeah, podcasting's cool.
Yeah, this one's been going on over 2 years now.
2 years. So you've got five cats, huh?
Yes. Five of little bastards.
Just before or after the injuries?
We started, I'm trying to think, the injuries, we didn't have any then because I was, like, we weren't even married when I first got injured. When we got married and moved into our own place, we got one cat. When we moved to a different place in the building, I woke up to a kitten on my chest one day, so there was two, and that's when I hurt myself. And it wasn't until we moved again that we ended up getting three, then four, and then number one died, so we got the new four and then a five. Wow. Yeah.
Cats are fun, man.
I love them.
I had a cat growing up for about 20 years. He lasted a long time. He was a great cat. There's all these pictures of me holding him as a little kid, you know, like with his little head, and I'm just holding him up by his head with my arm, not trying to choke him out.
Got the headlock on it.
Yeah. He was an indoor cat. He lived inside with me, and then he'd go out and beat up other cats and then make kittens and then come home. And he was a really happy cat. He was super cool at home, and then he'd go out and terrorize the neighborhood and come home.
Yeah, our fifth one is kind of a stupid happy cat. My wife, walking home from work the one day, she's walking down a back alley, and the cat just walked up and started like rubbing up against her leg. It seemed like it was probably an indoor cat that got out.
Yeah.
And the cat just started like laying down in the middle of the road. And my wife would put it off into the grass and shoo it away, just came back out, rubbed up against her, laid on the ground. And there's cars coming. So, you know, she called me. She's like, I don't know what to do. And the two of us, we tried checking all the different houses around there, asking, did you lose a cat? Did you lose a cat? Couldn't find any owner for it. So we just took it in for a couple of days until we could find either the owner or a new owner. And no one wanted the cat. So we ended up keeping it, getting attached. We named her Potato because of how dumb she is. And we tried for so long to get rid of her. No one would take her. And now that we've decided, you know, she's ours, we're keeping her, everybody wants her. She's so cute and stupid. We want her. No, you had your chance.
We offer a beer.
I'll be playing a game and she'll just run up on my chest and start licking my beard.
That's awesome.
I don't know what's wrong with her. She licks everybody's legs and feet. She's weird. She is such a weird cat, but we love her.
My wife and I and my kids were going this walk in our neighborhood, and we live out in the country a little bit, and we go up to this area where things aren't as well kept. You know, people are kind of more into hoarding in this area.
As we call them in my area, trailer trash. I don't sugarcoat it. I used to work with a rental company, and I had to rent and pick up shit from those people all the time, and they're just disgusting. Like, clean up. Do something. Well,
there's several buildings that are, like, packed. It's crazy, but there's all these cats out there, all these wild cats, or at least I thought they were wild. And, we were walking back, we passed them, and I'm used to seeing them when I walk up there because you get to this really awesome abandoned rock quarry, and I like to take my kids over there just fun to look at and hike. But on the way back, we were almost, we pretty far away from that house. My wife's like, I keep hearing this meow. And so she turns around, and one of the cats had followed us like a half mile.
Wow.
Meowing the whole time, but I didn't hear it. And we stop, and it comes up. It's super friendly, but it's really skinny. And my son's like, oh, man, we're going to keep this cat, you know? And my wife's, all of her family's like allergic to cats. So that's why we tried it once and that didn't fly very well. But anyways, I'm like, we're not going to keep this cat. We're not going to keep this cat. And he follows us all the way back to the house. And my son wants to get it food and get stuff out. I'm like, you're not doing that because I'm not going to keep this cat. And we walk up, go all the way back to where all those cats are. And as the cat will kind of let us hold it and then doesn't always want us to hold it. So I set it down and all these cats are kind of like looking at us now. And this lady comes out of this house and she's got like sweatpants pulled up, like all the way up above her belly. She's kind of like crouched over a little bit and she's not that old, but she's kind of looking old. And she said, and I was like, hey, is this your cat? She turns around and she looks and she squints and she goes, maybe. I was like, who says maybe that's my cat?
Oh my God.
So she's like, come here, kitty, come here. And the cat is behind me now, standing on the road, and its hair starts raising up and it's like, and I'm like, oh no, what did I do? You know, like, I just brought this cat back to hell. And at this point, it was too late.
So I'm guessing you have the cat now.
I know, man. She snagged that thing up.
Wow.
Yeah. I felt a little guilty, but...
You condemn that cat to hell.
Cat was like... I told my son, like, we were talking about it on the way home, and... Like, yeah, the cat's probably not happy wherever it's at, you know, probably, you know, saw that, you know, there's young kids in her family. I don't know. We were just, you know, talking with my son about it and you know, hey, maybe the cat just wanted to live with us because of this or whatever.
Right.
And then we're walking back up and I'm like, don't say anything when we meet this person. And sure enough, as soon as she picks up the cat, my son's like, are you going to put that cat down? She's like, why? And she's like, well, the cat was following us because it wasn't happy living with you. I'm like, shut up.
Oh, man.
Anyways. Cats are great, man.
That's fantastic. So, yeah, video games.
Yeah, did we even talk about the game?
I don't know. What game was it? Mad Max, right? So, yeah, Mad Max is pretty good.
Hey, so when I was at PAX, they had Uber had Mad Max vehicles picking people up.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, I got some pictures. I can send them to you later.
That'd be awesome.
Cool. So Draw Stick Man is coming out today when you release this podcast.
So pick it up. What's the price on it?
So it's launched. It's being sold for $7.99. And at launch, we're doing a 30% discount. So get it now. Get it right now.
Really? It's only $8?
Yeah.
I was expecting like 10 or 15. That's even more insane now.
Well, you know, we looked at the market, and a lot of the games were $10 or $15. And it was a lot of work to bring it to Xbox One. Know and to get the Kinect working and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, we just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't feel right to charge everybody 15 for it.
Yeah,
you know? And I was looking at 10, but you know, on mobile, it's not the same, and the game's easier on mobile. You can get through it a lot faster, but it's a lot cheaper on mobile. And then on Steam, it's like $5.99, I think $4.99 or whatever. So I just, I just wanted to find that spot, you know, where it was a fair, you know, fair trade that few people really felt awesome about the value.
Yeah, that's definitely a pretty good value for only $8 plus the sale.
Yeah.
That's pretty fantastic. So it sounds like a no-brainer to pick it up. But if you don't, we still have codes to give away for the game, thanks to Mr. Westfall here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So we will, of course, you know, all you got to do is send us an email, thesmlpodcast@gmail.com. Give us some feedback on the episode. Talk to us, and we pick winners. And random people just get random game codes, and it's that easy. It is that easy. Stuart, if you want some games, we got some codes.
Yeah. Hook me up. I like codes.
What kind of games do you want? We got this cool one. We just got it maybe last week. It's called Draw Stickman Epic. We got some codes for that.
Tell me about that game.
It's this crappy little mobile port. No, it really is a great game. I've had so much fun with it. This past week has just been crazy for indie games between Draw Stickman Epic. There was another one called Super Toy Cars. Had fun with that. Quest of Dungeons. Last week's show, we interviewed Eddie Lee from Funktronic Labs about Nova 111. It's just, this is such a great time for indie games, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, indie games are so important if you want to innovate.
Yeah, you know? New experiences, new fun experiences, even retro experiences. It's just, you don't have to pay $60 for great games anymore.
Joe, did you draw your cats in the game yet?
No, I didn't. I should.
Which cat would you make one that gets kidnapped?
I would probably make my one cat Piddles, because she's the fat one and it'll be easier to draw her. Yeah, we have five cats. Potato's the stupid one. Piddles is the fat one. Punk is the male who has like crazy lemur eyes. Peaches is the bitch. We just call her bitch face. And then, yeah, Peaches, Punk, Piddles, Potato, and then Coltrane. Like,
Coltrane.
From Gears of War, Coltrane.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she's the tiniest little kitten who's shy and quiet. So it makes no sense whatsoever that she would be named after Coltrane. But hey, it works.
For a minute, I was thinking it was a music reference. But,
Nope. Named after a gigantic black man who screams and shoots guns. And she's a tiny little kitten who has barely grown since we got her like 2 years ago.
It's hilarious. That's awesome. Well, do you ever play any mobile games?
Not too many. Every now and then I'll play them. If anything, I prefer getting Xbox-enabled games because I'm a Windows Phone owner. I did see Draw Stickman on the marketplace, but it's not Xbox-enabled. What's up with that?
Well, so this is a... We made this specifically an Xbox One title with Kinect, and... It's a different process to go with just the Xbox enabled. So Epic is going to support, you can already play it on Windows 10, but I don't think the official Windows 10 version is out yet. But it's different. The game's different than what you can play on Windows. But check out Draw Stickman Epic 2, we just released.
Nice.
Epic. And there's a lot more you can do with the drawing. You spent a lot of time iterating on the drawing technology, so I think you'll really like that. And you get to keep your drawings.
Ooh, nice.
So check that out and let me know what you think, Joe. That game I'm planning on bringing to the Xbox One as well, as long as this one does well.
And I'm pulling for you guys, because I would love to see more games from HitSense hit the console.
Awesome.
All right, well, I guess we will wrap this up. We've been going on for about 45 minutes or so. See, that's the problem with our show, is we get into good conversation and we just never want to end it. We just And I kind of feel bad that Chris and Pappy aren't here, because it would probably be double length interview, because we don't know how to shut up.
if they want to talk some time, we can cut that up. And it was a pretty weird, crazy conversation we had. We talked about a lot of odd things.
Hey, that's the beauty of our show. We don't limit anything. We just like talking to people and making awesome new friends for the show.
Well, Joe, really appreciate you reaching out and putting this together. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks again for coming on. I'm glad you were here. And do you have any final words for our listeners?
We'll get Draw Stickman Epic. Draw something awesome and share it with us. We have a drawing community. You should check out and post your drawings there. And have fun. Be creative every day.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
All right, take it easy. What's up, everyone? This is Joe again. Interview number 3 on this interview spectacular episode. Still no Chris, still no Pappy. Get used to it. They're dead to me forever until next episode. But one more developer on the show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, so hi, everyone. I'm David from Upfall Studios. I'm a game developer, and I just released my latest game called Quest of Dungeons.
Our listeners should be familiar with Quest of Dungeons, because I wouldn't shut the hell up about it last week. Of all the indie games that have come out lately, and even the retail games like Mad Max and Metal Gear, I have poured more time into Quest of Dungeons than any of the other games, and I can't stop.
Well, that's actually very good to hear then, because I was actually a bit concerned about releasing the game so close to those titles, in particular Mad Max and Metal Gear, because Metal Gear came out on Tuesday, I think, day one.
Yeah.
My game would be released on the Friday, so by then people would be really into the Metal Gear already. I was like a bit, I don't know if this is a good idea, but at the same time, it's for a different audience, so maybe it doesn't matter that much.
I'm not sure. I can't stop playing it, and I think it might be an actual problem at this point. I might need to see help on this, but it is so good. It is such a fun game, and it's got that whole aspect of one more run. Okay, one more, and that one more, just, it's never enough.
Yeah, you keep getting back to it. Yeah, I'm hearing people say that a lot. It's great to see that, because that's what I try to do with it. It's not a very long, it's not a 10 hours game that you play. You need to take 10 hours to do one run, but you keep playing it, so eventually you'll do much more than a single player game, a common single player game.
Yeah, the game definitely has that replayability aspect to it. What was the whole concept behind the game? What made you create a game like this?
So I was drawn to the roguelike genre, so the everything being procedural and randomized, because to be honest, it's just me doing all the code. I usually have some freelancers doing art and soundtracks, but it's just me doing the whole game. And a procedural game has the good part that you can reuse the assets in a different place, and it creates a whole different dungeon, for example, in my case. So I really wanted to try that, being able to create a whole different game with just a couple tweaks in the rules. I started making Quest of Dungeons after seeing a contest, a game jam called 7-Day Roguelike, in which you have to create a roguelike in a week, 7 days.
Wow.
I didn't make it in 7 days, so I got the general idea for it. I started making a draft, a prototype. It took me much longer, of course, to do that, but it started with that game jam. But I just kept working on it and adding my own stuff to it. I never made it. I never finished the game jam.
Well, I, for one, am happy that you continued making it. What all platforms is it on? I know it's on Xbox One. It's on Steam as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's on Steam as well for Mac, Linux, and Windows. You have it on iOS and Android as well. There are a couple of differences by now. So the mobile version is the one with the less features right now. And the Xbox One is the one that has everything. So it's the latest version, the most updated, with more content. It has a lot more tweaks and fixes. It's a lot more polished than the other ones right now.
Nice. What led you to bring it to console in the first place?
To be honest, having a game, for me in particular, having a game on a console was always like a dream. So I grew up playing games on consoles. So I tried to bring a game to Xbox 360 in 2010. I had another game, but I could never do that. They never liked the game. It wasn't a game good enough for the Xbox Live at that time, that one. As soon as I heard about the idea at Xbox program, I decided to send them Quest of Dungeons, the PC version, I wanted to do a console version of the game. I thought it would be a good fit. So that went from there.
Nice. What made you choose Xbox over anyone else? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I have to be honest. I think they chose me because I sent emails to all three major platforms. So Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft. Microsoft responded very quickly right away. They wanted a game. So I tried all three. They picked me, so to speak. It's not like I would refuse the other ones. But it never happened. So I went with Microsoft. I fully focused on the Xbox platform. I think that was a good thing that happened because I could focus just on one version. I tried to make it the best I can. But that was it. I talked to them. They gave me access to the developer tools and I made the game.
That's pretty awesome. I'm super glad that Microsoft jumped on it and got you involved with them because I'll be honest, I haven't had the best history with PlayStation, so I'm happy you came to a console that I play a lot.
I'm glad you. Yeah, it's cool because there are a lot of. It's hard to because I've been receiving some emails because obviously some people have Xbox, some people have PlayStation. But I'm always happy when I hear that people are happy. Okay, you brought it to my platform. I have an Xbox at home. I'm glad I have a game that I feel like you made it for us, for example. So that's cool.
Deep down, it feels like you made this game for me because I can't stop playing it. Like, I've raved about this game so much to everyone. People I see streaming online, I'm like, hey, have you tried this game yet? And they're like, oh, what game is that? I'm like, you should go check it out. Like, I'm telling everybody to buy this game because of how much I'm enjoying it. I think I'm getting to the point of being an insufferable asshole because I won't shut up about your game.
A bit like when Breaking Bad was on air and everybody was talking about it. You have to see it. You have to see it.
Yeah, kind of. Except this is a game and you don't have to sit and watch Netflix for 40 hours.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, no, but that's great because to be honest, that's all I have in terms of let's say marketing because I don't have that much. I don't have money to spend on marketing, so word of mouth is the best thing that can happen to me. Like people, one person enjoys the game, tells one friend, that friend can tell two more friends, and that goes from there. I think I wasn't expecting so much in it. Initial positive feedback because I've seen a lot of people tweeting and emailing me directly that they are enjoying the game. And I think it started to escalate a little bit over the weekend. So people would be telling other friends and watching people stream it. So that's awesome to me that people take like 5 seconds to say, play this game.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I'm glad it's going well. Have there been any sales figures yet? Is it doing above expected? Any idea? I know it's only been out a few days. We're recording this on Tuesday, but so it might be too early to tell.
Yeah, to be honest, I have no clue right now. I'm being honest. I still don't have any clue. The game came out on Friday. I think you guys, you're from the U.S., right?
Yep.
You guys had a three-day weekend, I think.
Yeah, we had a lot of people had Monday off for Labor Day.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm still waiting to get contact by Microsoft to see how the weekend went. So because the day it started, you guys are halfway through today, in the middle of the day, I'm saying. So it's night here. I'm expecting something tomorrow morning, an email on my inbox or something like that, but I have no idea right now. I just know that people are playing it and they like it. Overall, it's very positive feedback, but I have no idea about sales figure right now. It's a mystery right now.
I'm just happy to hear that the early word of mouth has been really positive. And I've been blabbing about the game so much, I kind of forgot to ask the first question I should have asked. Pretend I don't know anything about your game. Sell it to me. Explain the game. Tell me why I should buy it.
Oh, right. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I should have led with that, really. I've led with that all day. Yeah. And now I'm just like, I can't shut the fuck up because I love this game so much that we skipped over that. So.
No, yeah, sure. That's always a good one, like a sales pitch for the game. So the game, Quest of Dungeons, is a roguelike in its, at its core nature. It's a sort of a dungeon crawler game. Everything is procedural, randomized. Each time you start a new game, everything is in a different place. The enemies are never on the same spot. All weapons are procedural, so you never get a weapon with the same power. It's a turn-based game, but it plays very fast, so most of the time you can play it like a real-time game. But once you stop moving or doing some action, everything stops. It's not, you don't have an end turn button, so it plays very fast. The reason I made that was to bring both types of player to the game. So someone who likes turn-based games can feel comfortable. Someone who doesn't like to wait that much can still play it because it plays very fast. You do one action, the enemy does another one. It's very fast, and I think it worked. It worked good on that part. I was watching some streams over the weekend, and a couple of players didn't realize it was turn-based until a couple of minutes in. They thought it was. Yeah, that's curious to watch. So that's pretty much it. I tried to bring the core features of roguelikes, like permadeath. Once you die, you have to restart. But I tried to make it a bit more approachable to new players. So if a person plays other roguelikes, you still have those familiar techniques. But for those who don't play, it's not that hard to get into the game. It's probably more hard to finish it than to learn how to play it once you do a couple of runs.
Yeah, I'm really happy that it's more turn-based instead of pure action, because while I will play the game as pretty much a nonstop action game, when I get those little quests that's like, hey, there's this guy to kill in the southwest corner of the map, every room I go in, I go one block at a time to make sure I don't accidentally run up on this normal-looking enemy, but it's just a little bit of a different color, and it kicks my ass.
Yeah, the boss fights are... I've been hearing that a lot. Yeah, the boss fights can be very... They can wreck a whole run.
I was bummed because I was going for the, Fly You Fool achievement, the 30-minute one?
Yes.
I was making great time, got to the bottom floor, got to the boss, and I got insta-killed with a critical hit.
Yeah.
I wanted to cry. I have been trying so hard for that achievement.
Yeah, that one is tough, but I've seen a lot of people doing it. Some people have been tweeting me, I finally did it, so... It's possible. It just takes a lot of effort to do it.
Oh, it's going to happen for me. It is going to happen. I just, my problem is most of the time I'm going too quick. Like, I won't completely clear out a floor. I'll be like, well, I got most of it. Here's the exit. Let me go down. And like, I'll die to the boss and it'll be like, your playtime, 16 minutes. Son of a bitch, I could have done more.
Yeah, but you're saying that, and it's curious. I've seen some very cool approaches to that particular achievement that people are taking to maximize the probabilities of finishing it. I've seen some players like rushing to the bottom, to the last floor, and trying to survive as much as possible until the last couple of minutes, and then going to the final boss. So leveling up on the last one, it's much harder, but you know that you're on the last one already. You don't have to explore or probably being killed on the way. I never thought of that when I was doing it. I thought the group would, I don't know, progressively go down as fast as possible, but some people just rush into it and they level up, I don't know, right near the boss room.
Yeah.
The final one.
Yeah, I think I can do this a lot easier if I had a stopwatch with me, or if I were just patient enough to open my phone and start a timer, because I could just make sure that I'm doing good on time and, oh, I don't need to rush. So It's going to happen, though. I know it'll happen.
No, I believe you will. Yes, I trust your skills to do it.
Well, I'm only missing 3 achievements. I have the 30-minute achievement, and then I still have not beat the game with either the Shaman or the Necrodancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, always seem to die at the boss with those two because they're just so weak.
Yeah, the Shaman is usually the least favorite one among people, but it's actually my favorite one because of it's a mixed class. But you have to use his skills to debuff the enemies. He has a lot of stuff that you can use to, I don't know, terror and sickness. That really helps. If you jump into a fight debuffing the enemy, it really helps.
Yeah, that's what I need to focus on more. I just rush through so much.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons. Rushing is usually better for the warrior or even the assassin, but the other two classes, you really have to take a different approach to. You can't use the same one. I think that's probably why people dislike the Shaman a little bit, because it's a much slower character to play. But once you get it, I don't know if you caught all the skills, for example, the summon.
Yeah, I had the summon and I would use him a lot, but he always seemed to get in my way. And I hate to do this. Can I pause the interview for just 1 minute? I have someone knocking at my door.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'll be right back. I'm sorry about this.
Sure. No problem.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Not a problem. It happens.
So where were we?
You were
the shaman. The shaman.
The shaman.
I gotta stop sucking with the shaman. Oh man, but yeah, it's just such a fantastic game.
Thank you.
I can't. I've said it like 40 times already, and I just can't stop saying it.
But that's great to hear. So you're missing 3 achievements. What was the? Oh, so you're missing to finish with the Necrodancer, the Shaman, and the 30 minutes.
Yep.
Oh, you're very close.
Yep. I'm looking online, and it is saying that so far I've played the game for 22 hours and 43 minutes, which
that's awesome.
I've sunk so much time into this game. Anytime I'm watching TV, I'll have the TV snapped on the Xbox, and I'll have the game, and I'm just playing it while peeking over at the TV.
That's also a great feature from the Xbox. Yeah,
snap.
Actually, we could be doing this interview over Skype, and you could be playing at the same time.
Oh, I should be. Except I'm holding a mic, so I can't really. That wouldn't work too well. I'll
set the mic down here, and no one will hear me while I'm talking on the show.
But that'll be funnier if you hear the episode.
Yeah, for people at home hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, the way that we record is we have the audio from Skype going directly into a mixing program, and I have a handheld mic going directly into the mixing program. So how I sound to you, I don't actually sound on the episode.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, so again, it'll be a lot funnier on the show.
sure. Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea how the whole recording a podcast, I have no idea how much work goes into it, to be honest. It's a mystery to me.
It's not that much work. I know some people do it, like they'll just get a group call going on like Google Hangouts or something and just record that. But we try getting a little bit of a better sounding show since our one co-host, who unfortunately, as mentioned previously, he has a job, which means he has to work and not be here. He is actually in bands and does a lot of sound mixing and sound work. So he has like good vocal mics and condenser mics and mixers and everything else. And we try to make the show sound as good as we can.
Oh, sure. That's awesome. Yeah, I've actually done one with Google Hangouts the other day. Yeah, they usually just record the output from all the sounds that are coming to the computer, to the browser.
Yeah, we try to make it sound a little better. Like we have the sound quality of a professional podcast and the immaturity of like a bunch of 13-year-olds making dick jokes.
It's always the never grow up thing. It's better not to grow up too much.
Yeah, this is going to be such a weird episode for our listeners because it's just me doing three interviews with different game developers and no Chris, no Pappy. We're going to do a second episode later this week and release them together. But yeah, this is a fun little experiment that we're doing this week.
Maybe they like the new format better. I don't know. Well, it's better with more people, but maybe it ends up being great as well.
It's a lot more off topic and more vulgar with the other two as well, which is always fun.
Yeah, it's always fun as well.
Yeah, if people are listening to this and you're missing the fact that we always used to talk about like dick jokes and fleshlights and absolutely nothing related to video games, just check the other episode this week.
Yeah, it's a bit different. So, what have you been playing other than just curiosity?
Oh, man, I've been playing way, way, way too much. I've dabbled with Metal Gear. I've dabbled with Mad Max. I played Nightmares from the Deep, one of the indie games that just came out. I put a lot of time into Super Toy Cars, who we interviewed earlier today. Nova 111, we interviewed last week. Just so many different games. Draw Stickman Epic, which is actually coming out this week. It'll be live on Friday, which is when people are hearing this. And then way, way, way too much time with Quest of Dungeons.
That's a lot of games, yeah.
just way too much time with Quest of Dungeons. And then Forza comes out next week, so I'm going to lose my life to that as well.
Yeah, these months are going to be crazy. It's September until Christmas, it's crazy. It's too much game. It's weird to say, but it's too much games. Not enough time.
It's going to be a crazy fall, and the biggest thing for me is, as much as I love Forza and Fallout, the biggest thing for us in this entire show together is Rock Band 4. We are massive Rock Band fans on the show. We kind of started and ended with Rock Band. We actually took a couple month hiatus in the middle there, and we stopped doing the show because Rock Band came back, and then we started the show again.
Oh, really?
Because me and my one co-host were playing Rock Band, and we're like, we should do the show again. So Rock Band is a big central aspect of our show, which is pretty cool. But
that's very cool.
One question that my co-host Pappy always likes to ask developers is, What games did you play during development to kind of like decompress and relax from what you were working on?
Oh, let me see if I can remember, because it took a lot of time. So I definitely played Mario Kart, the last one, 8, I think. Mario Kart 8, the Wii U, because it's easy to pick and play like half an hour or 1 hour and drop it. Sometimes you don't have that much time. I also played, I think I was playing the Link Between Worlds on the 3DS.
Oh, that game was so good.
That came out, yeah. That's a really great game. I'm a huge Zelda fan, so that game, I really liked it. As a sequel, I think it did a great job. I still prefer the original one, the prequel, the Link to the Past, but it's so good, the game. It's very, very well done.
I think A Link Between Worlds was one of the best Zelda games to come out in a long, long time.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Have you tried the... I got a chance to try the new one that's coming out, the multiplayer one.
Triforce Heroes? No, I didn't get... I haven't gotten to try that. I don't really get to too many conventions like PAX or E3 or anything like that. The biggest thing I go to is a convention called MAGFest, and that's not even really a convention. That's like a weekend party. It acts like a convention in that they have like panels and vendors and everything else, but it's more of a party because it's just a lot more casual, and most of the time people walk around with alcohol everywhere.
Yeah, most conventions don't have the alcohol going around thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you ever get to America for any kind of conventions or shows or anything like that, but in February is MAGFest 14, I believe, and if you want to have a good time, I'll tell you to check out MAGFest.
Okay, sure. No, I haven't been able to go to the U.S. yet. I really want to go someday, probably because as a developer, I would love to come to, I don't know, PAX or E3 or something like that. But it's really expensive to do the whole travel, more plus paying the, I don't know, to show up and show our games there. So I'm still doing around Europe for now. But yeah, absolutely.
I know MAGFest, starting last year, they had an event called an Indie Game Showcase. And to my knowledge, I might be wrong on this, but I don't think they charged anything for devs to come in and set up their games and just show them off.
That's great.
It was pretty great. There were actually some friends of the podcast that the one guy actually used to be a host in the beginning of the show, Tim, and then another friend who's with us a lot, Kunal, they were showing off their game Pixel Noir, which they're going to be doing a new Kickstarter for in the coming weeks, but they were showing off their game, another Xbox One game coming out in the next week or two weeks, called Clusterpuck 99. They were showing off their game. It was a really, really cool little indie game showcase, and it was in the big gaming room with all the console games set up, so it was just another game in the room that you got to check out and play with the developers and talk to them. And MAGFest is a really awesome atmosphere. Everyone who's gone to both PAX and MAGFest usually says that PAX is more serious with like actual like Nintendo will be there, Sony will be there, where MAGFest, they're not sponsored, they don't have to answer to anybody, and it's just a party. It's a friend of ours performed at PAX last year, PAX South, which was going on at the same time as MAGFest, and they left PAX after they performed to come to MAGFest.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So,
yeah, because, well, you know, sometimes events get too big or too corporate, and eventually you need to go there for... because there's more people there and your product will get more awareness, but you have more fun on smaller shows. That's usually the rule.
Yeah, it's
so I get I understand what you're saying with that one.
Yeah, and
Not charging is a big plus. Yeah, because most of them charge and not cheap or even indie games to be there. I know a couple of people that usually, I don't know, they rent a booth and they share it because it's too expensive for just one person or one studio. So they end up renting one single space and dividing it to everyone, so everyone can have a chance. That happens a lot.
Yeah, it's nuts how much they'll charge some people to show off a game. Like people who are trying to get off their feet and make money in the gaming industry, they have to pay so much just to show it off.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's usually the problem, yes.
But I don't think Quest of Dungeons even needs it. It's good enough to stand on its own.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Well, I've been singing its praises for so long, so, and I will continue to do so.
Yeah, but I think other than that, I played a couple more games, still referring to your question. I played a couple more games. I can't remember them all, but what was I playing? I think I was playing something. I remembered. I was playing also Bayonetta, the new one.
Ah, I've been meaning to try that out. I still haven't.
Yeah, but it came out, I don't know, last year or this year.
I think earlier this year. Yeah, I love the first game. I just never got to try the second one yet.
No, it's much better. Yeah, I think they did. I was a bit, I don't know, not scared, but because since Nintendo was publishing it, I thought maybe they would be. They usually restrict some stuff. Yeah. To because of their audience or something like that, but no, the game it's still great. It plays awesomely, great job. It's a shame because it got a lot of good reviews, but I don't think it got too much traction after it. I don't see that many people talking about it, and it's a great game. I don't know if they broke even selling it. I haven't seen any sales figures, but I hope there's a third one.
Yeah, I'd love to see another. And I think a lot of people ignored it because it only was on Nintendo, but they don't realize the game wouldn't have happened at all without Nintendo because no one else would step up to foot the bill. Nintendo was like, "Exactly. Do it, bring it over." But
I think that's it. I think that was it. Yeah, but most people assume like, oh, there was a second game and Nintendo went and paid a bunch of money so they wouldn't release it to anywhere else. No, they just funded the game. That's the thing. They funded it.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff are you playing right now? What have you been playing lately?
So I've been playing Until Dawn during the night. Which was probably a bad idea, but I don't have any time during the day, so I finished the game yesterday. Actually, I'm really impressed. It's a very good game. I really liked it, and I usually don't like this kind of games. So they have a couple more games I think in the same genre, but I usually don't like those interactive movie kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but what drew me to this game was the story. I watched the trailer, and I love those B-movie types, those horror movies with all those cliches.
Yeah.
They're so bad that you get a good laugh from it. So I decided I want to try this, and it's very good. It's very good actually. I'm really surprised. Maybe because I wasn't expecting much, but it's great because. I don't know. You know that the general how the game plays, right?
I haven't played it myself, but I watched it on Twitch a bunch because we talked about it. I think last week and the week before it's come up. Our one friend, he's into horror stuff, so he was watching streams of it. Gameplay wise, it's not something I would personally play, but thank God Twitch exists because I could watch someone else play it.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have that much gameplay, but you can the cool part is, are the choices. I was playing it and remember of Mass Effect, and I was like, oh man, I wish Mass Effect had this kind of your choices had this kind of impact on the story. Because I was playing Until Dawn, you would choose something like go left or go right, and I don't know, 1 hour later you would see the consequence of your choice, and I was like, oh god, why did I do this? I should have chosen to.
Nice.
And that I love that part. I'm probably gonna replay it to try to save more people. For example, half of my characters died. So no, that's what I was playing. That's the latest game I'm playing. I still don't know what I'll pick. I'll try Mario Maker next.
Yeah, okay. I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of cool stuff on YouTube and reviews. So I really want to play other people's levels. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited for, because I'm not very creative myself, but I will play the shit out of things other people make for me.
Exactly. I'm glad they got into the whole community sharing levels internet thing, because we're going to be playing Mario levels. Unless they put the servers down, we're going to be playing Mario levels for a long time.
Yeah. But anyway, I know it's pretty late out where you are, so, and we are creeping up on about 40 minutes here, so I figure we could wrap this up.
Sure.
I want to thank you for coming on the show and being a part of this. I want to thank you for releasing such a fucking amazing game that I can't
thank
stop
you.
Talking about and playing. It's just, it feels like everything that I would have wanted in a game. And I thank you for making it and coming on and talking about it.
So thank you. No, thank you for inviting me. It was a great 40 minutes, more or less, being just talking about games and Quest of Dungeons. And I'm glad I got the chance to talk to you. And thank you for speaking so much about the game. That helps.
And also thank you for giving us codes to give out for the game, because we're still doing that as well. We explained it earlier in the show. Just don't forget, send us an email at thesmlpodcast@gmail.com. And if we like you enough, you could get a game code for his game for free, plus other games, because we're just giving shit out here.
That's awesome.
So is there
free stuff? Who doesn't like it?
Everybody loves free stuff. Because free is good. But is there anything else that you would like to say to our listeners and for coming on the show and listening to you?
Just thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. Try to check, if you haven't, check out some Quest of Dungeons, see some YouTube videos, see what other people are telling about it. Maybe you like it. Maybe you want to buy it. If you don't end up getting one of the codes, and if you have any questions, just ask me on Twitter or via email. I'm usually around.
And what is your Twitter for people?
So my Twitter is DJ_link. I'm very fast replying to that one unless I'm sleeping. And my email contact is on the – you can find the other contacts on via my Twitter account. So it should be easy.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on, and it's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.
So there we have it. Three interviews. Way too much talking. I've had a long day. I'm going to fucking... Pappy sucks.